Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. London reporting. Ministry of Defense from the Ministry of Defense in Kyiv. Cost of Bakhmut, meat grinder, in quotes, battle on Russian army revealed. This report says the Russians in the last 24 hours, 1,600 killed. This is Kyiv reporting, not Russia. However, the word meat grinder seems applicable. And what does this tell us about the war in Ukraine? Why, day after day, do we get reports the pocket is closing and the Ukrainian forces are cut off? No, it's not closing. Or the Ukrainian forces are leading a strategic retreat. Or no, they're going to fight on. Or Prigozhin of the Wagner Group saying we've nearly surrounded Bakhmut. Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Navy retired, CBS News, visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. This is about the tactics of a battlefield, but also about information that we're getting from Moscow, from Kyiv, from London. Jeff, a very good evening to you. This on-again, off-again Bakhmut, it looks like what they describe, a meat grinder. Where is it going? What advantage do the Russians get? What advantage do the Ukrainians get to hold on to what appears from a drone picture to be a completely destroyed residential area?
Yeah, I think, John, you're exactly right. And what you described really is the competing narratives are ongoing. The Ukrainian narrative that we can hold Bakhmut, or soldiers in the Ukrainian army now refer to it as Fortress Bakhmut. And President Zelensky in the last day or so doubled down, saying his general said we should continue to defend it and can defend it. And on the other side, of course, Moscow saying that the city is almost encircled. But there's a third narrative, and that's the narrative between Prigozhin, the Wagner Group, and the Russian military. And Prigozhin complaining repeatedly that his soldiers are not being provided sufficient materiel, ammunition, and the like, and are bearing the brunt of the casualties. And there are some estimates for the Wagner Group alone. They have suffered 30,000 out of their 50,000 man force are now casualties, largely due to that meat grinder, which is Bakhmut. The Ukrainians believe, I think, that they can wear down the Russian army and hopefully set conditions then for a counteroffensive. They also claim that right now the exchange ratios are 7 Russian soldiers killed or wounded for every single Ukrainian soldier. But again, this is part and parcel of the narrative and underscores where this is going in a way, John. And that is, of course, this town now has taken on a lot more political importance, perhaps, than military importance. The battle's been going on for 9 months. Russia has not had a success in Ukraine for 9 months in terms of taking a significant piece of territory. So that's why I think they're so determined, they in Moscow, to have some kind of a success in this particular effort.
And yet, what are they winning? Because the Institute for the Study of War reports, and they get their information from very good sources, we could guess at them, that there is no effort right now to mount an offensive beyond Bakhmut. They can't see it. There's no mobility. If and when the Russians are satisfactory in control of what appears to be just ruined streets after ruined streets, where do they go with this?
That's exactly right, John, because what we're seeing is dismounted infantry supported by artillery. But at the same time, we see no real heavy mechanized support in terms of our personnel carriers. In fact, even the tanks that seem to be employed are largely used as fire support as opposed to direct assault vehicles. Now, some of that may be due to, even though the town is a wreckage, it's an urban area, and it's difficult to maneuver heavy armored vehicles there. But we just don't see the evidence of them on the battlefield on the Russian side, suggesting that perhaps the Russians have lost so much equipment that they're not able to replace that, or at least replace it in units that can then conduct offensive operations. So if they are, in fact, successful and take the city, they don't appear right now to have an organized force, which would have to be mechanized, supported by artillery and tanks, that could exploit that success, even if they were able to take that particular city.
I'm trying to imagine what Bakhmut looks like. I mean, I've seen enough of the pictures from Stalingrad. Individual defensive positions by two or three soldiers with inadequate ammunition. However, they can very clearly cut off advances and retreats by the enemy in ruined buildings where no matter how many shells you throw at the building, it's still secure. They're in the basement. They're shooting out of rubble. Is that what we should imagine Bakhmut looks like?
Exactly right, John. I mean, I was in the city of Fallujah shortly after the battle there in Iraq, and it was one never-ending destroyed city. And this is Bakhmut, a city at the start of this war of about 70,000 people. One person that was there described it as if you'd seen film of the massive tsunamis that hit villages and towns coming out of the ocean in Asia a number of years ago. That's what it looked like when the ocean receded. Total devastation. And as a consequence, again, Russian infantry being employed in mass assaults, a lot of them just being basically cannon fodder. And it seems to be an effort to position whatever professional forces are present, airborne forces, the more professional Wagner units behind them. So hopefully this cannon fodder and some suggestions, these guys with only a few weeks of training may last only a few hours from the time they arrive on the battlefield. But hopefully they can soften up the Ukrainians and then following that up with this more professional assault. Even artillery fire on the Russian side seems to be down. Suggestions from the high point we saw last fall, John, which reached at times 60,000 artillery rounds fired by the Russians in a single day, down by some 75%, suggesting they are having their own problems with shortages of manufacturing of ammunition as well as equipment.
I read about this, and given that caveat, because it's an interpretation advanced by the Kyiv side, what it looks like is the same tactics that the Russians used in the Finnish War, 1939 to 1940. Wave after wave of ill-equipped troops, some with weapons, some without weapons, against fixed machine gun units, and just overwhelming the Finns, eventually driving them back by sheer numbers. That would mean that Russia's not changed its tactics in, what, 80 years, 70 years? Is that possible, Jeff?
It seems sort of to be the case. I was talking to a colleague of mine in Kyiv, and he said they oftentimes send more people in the attack than we have machine gun bullets. And so what we're seeing, to use another historical metaphor, I think, is the Russians want to fight World War One. They want to conduct a war of attrition. I think what they really are trying to do is get the Ukrainians to commit their reserve forces that they know are preparing for a counteroffensive. One way to prevent a counteroffensive is get your opponent to commit his forces piecemeal, and then you can take them on in small quantities. I think that's what the Russians are trying to do. On the Ukrainian side, they don't want to fight World War One. They don't want to fight a battle of attrition. What they want to do is they want to fight World War Two. They want to fight a battle of maneuver. And they're hopeful that if they can grind down this Russian force by primarily, as they appear to be using, territorial forces defending Bakhmut, preserve their professional forces, see them in the next few months better equipped with Western tanks or personnel carriers and the like, and then conduct a counteroffensive, hopefully against a weakened Russian residual force.
We come to the counteroffensive. It's late winter in Ukraine. It's early spring coming within days. That means mud season. It also means that it is possible now to launch a counteroffensive, given that the winter is cleared and you have good communications. I sent you notice, Jeff, this was a report in Stars and Stripes. The headline, U.S. to send bridge launching vehicles for tank deployments to Ukraine in new $400 million aid package. What does this point to? It's an elaborate system to cross rivers. Why?
Because what you want to do, John, is have these AVLBs, which are mounted on a tank chassis, and they move pretty close behind the advancing armored column in an offensive operation, tanks, armored personnel carriers. So if you hit a bridge that has been knocked out or partially knocked out, you can quickly lay down this assault bridge and then keep the offensive going. Because once the offensive starts to roll, once you've made any kind of a breakthrough, you want to exploit that. Speed becomes the critical variable. And that's why an AVLB is so crucial in offensive operations. How do the rivers run in this area? How do the rivers run primarily across Europe? They run north-south. So if you want to conduct an offensive going basically eastward, as the Ukrainians do, you need the ability to bridge, go across those bridges rather quickly if you're going to continue that operation and exploit any success you might have.
Tactics win battles. Logistics win wars. We're going to turn to logistics because everybody's out of ammunition. Everybody, what are they going to do about it? Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, visiting professor, Dickinson College, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. I'm John Dunn.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.